Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I am very excited to welcome Jerry Kahn, Vistage chair, strategist, and mentor who helps CEOs, including those leading family businesses, navigate growth, leadership, and legacy. With a background that blends psychology, law, and entrepreneurship, Jerry has founded and scaled multiple ventures from presentation excellence to Age Brilliantly, a platform for people designing fulfilling 100-year lives. As a Vistage chair, Jerry works with business leaders to challenge limiting assumptions, discover fresh opportunities, and plan for transitions that go beyond financial success into purpose and legacy. His perspective is especially valuable for family business leaders navigating generational change. Jerry, welcome to Growing Up B2B. It's great to have you here today.
It's my pleasure being here, and it's great to be with a bunch of grown-ups.
So let's start with your story. How did your unique mix of psychology, law, and business experience lead into what you're doing today?
Oh, that's a kind of an interesting journey. But very simply, I grew up knowing I wanted to change the world.
Okay.
And I had the opportunity of working for a great healthcare company. And I'm a person who's really great at math, so data is easy for me. And I'm studying the data, and I'm realizing that no matter what we do in service, there are laws that are being passed by Congress that are affecting people's access to services. And so I said, somebody needs to explain to these congressmen why this thing is beneficial for both the people and financially. And I said, that's great. I'm getting my PhD right now, and I'm going to go down there. And the person says to me, are you stupid? And I go, sometimes, but what's the issue here? And he goes, they don't listen to psychologists. I said, what do you mean they don't listen to psychologists? They don't listen. If you want to get them to listen to you, you got to have the card and you got to be a lawyer. So I thought about it and I said, you know what? I'm going to go to law school at night, get myself a law degree. And then when I go down, I got to get two cards. I belong to two different unions. And that's how I started. And I went to the Hill and worked on healthcare and environmental legislation, passed one of the omnibus bills that was there. Ironically, the issue I went down for had been passed the year before, and it's every 3 years. So I couldn't change that particular law that I was looking at. Somebody, no one told me about that. But that's how it all started. And I had made a decision. I have no interest in politics. It's just not my personality. But I don't mind being a political wonk in the sense of doing good research and creating great policy. And after we got the bill through and went head to head with the President of the United States as administration on one issue, and 48 states got screwed, and two of them got what my member and I came up with as a much better innovative solution. I said, you know something, the real thinking for what changes the world doesn't come on the Hill. It's where the power is, but the thinking comes before. So what I need to do is get into the private sector in some way and make a difference there. And that led me eventually in healthcare and creating something that 30 years ago no one was dealing with, how to get corporations providing wellness programs and fitness programs. We were really a pioneer in that. And one company in New York, which is usually where I'm from, came and said, we heard about what you're doing, and we're an innovative company, it's a public company, and we're about to go bankrupt. And we thought maybe you could figure out how to turn us around. And I go, I just bought a house down here in Maryland. Don't you really want, I'll come up and listen. And I listen, and they're really backs against the wall. And I'm ready to say no. And so everyone has a button. And my button was very clear. And he says, so you say that if you see an innovation, you're going to do whatever it takes to get it understood and implemented. And I said, that's me. So you're going to walk away on us? And with that, I took over. I came back literally the weekend after that was Thursday. On a Monday, I started. I had 28 days to stop a union call. That's how desperate this place was. And about a year and a half later, stock's up tenfold and we're profitable. And all the dentists understood what we were doing, the doctors, the lab people, the workers really understood what I had done. Management still didn't completely get it. And so I left, and that got me into the private sector and working with computers and high-end technology, and eventually Brilliant Image is a company for 15 years pioneering great graphics with microcomputers, 5,000 clients, 24/7. So I learned, as you'll see, by rolling up my sleeves and getting whatever it is I have to do done, did. And every time we started a new client, didn't matter if it's Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, Microsoft, they'd all make it very clear. You do understand, Mr. Khan, that if you deliver late, you don't have to show up the next day at work. And I said,
Okay.
I got it. He said, you're up for it. I said, yeah. And when I finished, I was saying 15 years and 5,000 clients later, never got sued, never had a problem.
Awesome. And somewhere along the way, that led you to Vistage.
Vistage came somewhat later,
Okay.
after I sold the company. So we can talk about selling companies and why I believe in families and knowing how to handle it. Because so when I was a psychologist, Virginia St. Cyr talks about how you build businesses and says a business is essentially an extension of a family model. Because you have to do it, but you also can't do nepotism and you can't be unfair and all the kinds of issues about integrity fit there. And so that's always been in the back of my mind as a coach and as a member. And so after I sold it and started a couple of other companies, going through a change of life, and I get this call, would you be interested in becoming a Vistage chair? And I said, tell me about it. Says, what we do is we help set up mastermind groups for people who really care about their business and don't want to just talk about it, really make a difference. And your job would be to help facilitate that and grow them. And I go, wow, that's what I've been doing all my life, growing people. Sounds interesting to me. And so it's now 15 years. I just was told, I didn't know it was that long, that I've been working pretty much with Vistage. And it gives me a chance to work. My mentor said to me, and mentors are very important in business, he said, you will eventually find, you will build your groups in your image. And you will find those people. And for me, that means transformative people who say, I'm not going to settle for just being a little better than the guy next to me. I want to make a change in the world. I want to encourage my people to make changes in the world. I want to serve my customers in a way they've never been served before. And I think it can all be done at one time. And so I go, those are the kind of people I look for. Thank God, those are the kind of members I've had the privilege of serving. And it's been incredible. When Vistage, about, I don't know, 5 years ago, introduced its podcast. So I get involved with a lot of early podcasts and not just late
Okay.
ones. They have two people lined up for the original one, and then they're starting to look outside, and I get a call. We heard about you. Because I'm me. I got a lot of no hubris, a lot of humility. So I don't really tout me. My job is to be a really good Sherpa for my people. And I said, I've got a guy who's, and you'll enjoy the story, he's in HVAC. And first time we meet, I said, I know that's heating, ventilation, air conditioning. New York City, it's a lot of the big buildings and stuff like that. So what makes you different than everybody else? He said, we do almost no big buildings. I said, tell me the kind of stuff you do. We have three of the four tennis stadiums for the Grand Slams. We have an orangutan exhibit in one state. We have butterfly exhibit in another state. Project I'm really excited by right now is a telescope in Chile that's being aimed in space. And I said, explain how all of that's HVAC. He says, it's about climate control. Think about that telescope.
Yeah.
Open up this top, it's out there, condensation has to hit. You can't use a telescope that way. You have to figure out how to do that. And that's exactly what he does. Figures out the impossible. He's now in the Middle East. The company's growing leaps and bounds. So it's
Wow.
really very exciting watching people grow. And to the point again about family, he treats his particular group, he's just the New York office for the company, as very much a family to grow. So the example is I run something called mentoring internships. We've had over 650 interns before COVID, and we continue. We just stopped counting. He right away latched on. He said, "I try to do stuff also." I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I take high school students and college students, and I give them a chance to work over a summer or something like that to learn." I said, "So do you then use that to cultivate and hire people?" He says, "Do you?" I said, "Not really." He says, "I don't either. My job is for them to understand what I do and why excellence is what you need to be in everything you do. And then when they're going now to their colleges, and maybe in this case, mostly college, he has a roommate or she has a roommate. She says, I'm looking to do something with an exciting company that does ME engineering. And she goes, call my friend Ed." And that's how he recruits the best and the brightest.
Ah, interesting, interesting. So now, as a Vistage chair, you work with leaders across many industries, HVAC and other, and a lot of those are family-governed businesses or multi-generational businesses. So talk for a moment, Jerry, if you would, about what makes a peer advisory group like a Vistage such a powerful model for the family business executive specifically.
For them, it's even stronger than anyone else in the following way. As if I'm an executive and I have, let's assume, five direct reports in a normal company, the odds are none of them are going to be family members, which means to some extent they're all going to be objective and analyze what's going on. But if it's your son, if it's your brother's kid, or anything like that, what happens is there's family dynamics that's changing the conversation. That's the biggest issue you're worrying about at all times. You're on a tightrope. I want to magnify what we can do in the family, but I also don't want to screw up the family or screw up the business. And how do I manipulate that? So what makes Vistage great is that you have people who are dedicated to excellence as a concept and want to help other people, the sharers, the givers. And they're trying to help each other do that. When you are in a normal company, fine, you have it. Now, I have all the time when we talk to people, oh, my people, they're all objective. They're all going to give me this stuff. And I think they'll go through stories and I say, let's be honest about it. Someone's got a problem in the family and you're going to take care of them or not take care of them. You get them in a family, that's table stakes. You started off with those kinds of issues. So, how do you overcome them? And how do you deal with them? So, you're not showing some nepotism, some favoritism, whatever the case may be. And what I've been very lucky about in most of the cases that I have is these people have understood the value of the outsider's view and try to bring that into their family. And as I have a unique way of running my groups, I invite each of my CEOs when it's a relevant topic, a speaker like you've been there, so you know what I'm talking about. I say, why don't you bring in your marketing person? Why don't you bring in your salesperson? Because this conversation is going to be really good. And the reasoning for doing that is twofold. I want to educate them so they see the outside world a little bit better. And second of all, I want to be able to see how that person really does interact with that person and with other people. And so there's this level of depth that I bring to help my members by watching and observing. And that's because all my life I've learned, I'm again a social psychologist, personality psychologist, is that we learn from watching other people. And so that's what I've always been doing. And I just watch and I listen and I hear. And then I pick up a pattern and I figure out now how do I work with that. So
Interesting.
I think it magnifies. I think it's what's exciting about it right now is we live in a different world than we did when you and I were kids. So when you and I were kids, we had a world of hierarchies and very rigid structures and things like that. What's really, and it's a big boost to what Age Brilliantly is all about, is that the great resignation came from COVID. Okay. It wasn't an accident. People suddenly could stop, and instead of just doing, they stopped to think and they said, wait a minute, I'm going to get a babysitter who doesn't speak English to watch my 2-year-old so I can fly from New York to California to get a signature on a contract that I'm then going to fly back on. Okay. That kind of doesn't make a lot of sense because there's a thing called DocuSign. And I can use that and get the same thing done and spend time with my kid. Why am I doing it? So for the first time, in my opinion, of humankind, this and it happened in other places for different reasons, but there was this massive unleashing of I can do more with my life and I should be doing more with my life. So the standards, the expectations increased. And that becomes a really interesting issue because that changes jobs, it changes where AI is, it changes where business is. We have something called Project Thrive. I just finished this morning or another presentation on it because it's how I think the 2030 to 2050 business will run, it'll be that different than it's been before. But what's interesting is to watch it in a family company. So I'll give you a concrete example. So the big problem about figuring out how you have remote isn't can that person do it? Technologically, they can do it. The question becomes one is should they do it? And what should they do it means will you benefit more by working alone, like when I'm writing a paper, I don't want to be disturbed. Or will it be better if I'm saying, this is my idea, what do you think of it? You don't get it, so it's not clear. Okay, then I need to be clearer about what I'm doing and have that kind of dialogue. And so when it's just normal workers, they can do that if they do that well. It's a function, again, of the leader and the culture, and I spend a lot of time on that. But in a family, it's a function of the dynamics. So it's an actual case that's just really great is that there's four generations. Grandpa's still there, doesn't really work. Daddy really runs the company. The kid is being groomed to become the next person to take it over, and he has children who are young. In the Bill world you and I grew up in, at least I grew up in, I would never think in the middle of the day my kid's going to be putting on a play in school in for third grade, and I'm going to take off from work and not be there to make sure that Steve Jobs gets his slides when he needs them done. Not even on my brain power is not an issue. Okay. And as I grew older, I said, sometimes I could have done those things. Why didn't I even think about it? Because it wasn't on our radar. The Great Resignation changed that. It said it should be on your radar. Your life should be bigger. So we call it being holistic. Your whole life fits together. There's no work-life balance. That's garbage. That's the old generation. The current generation's, how do I integrate what I do in a time that I can manage it? So in this particular case, the father's the CEO is out, and a project's working with grandpa who's taking charge of it, and the grandson who's the real worker bee in this case. And the kid says to him, listen, I'm going to get this stuff to you tonight by 8 o'clock. Is that fine? Yeah, okay. And I'll see you later. And then a few minutes later, he says, I wonder why you even bothered coming in and telling me that. Okay. He walks in his office. The secretary says, he's not here. Where is he? He went to visit the kids. They're putting on a play. They're in elementary school, they're putting on a play. And he wanted to be there for them. And he goes, does he do that a lot? Not a lot, but he does that. He goes to the sports things. He spends time with them. Well, the next day he comes in, and immediately grandpa comes to talk to him. Now, grandpa talking to grandson, so you can figure the family dynamics on this one. And he's saying, what are you doing? You're supposed to be here working from 9 to 5. And he says, can we stop for a minute? Let me ask you a question. Did you get your project for 8 o'clock like I promised you? Yeah, no problem. Actually, it was a great job you did. Good. What? Do you know how I did it? He says, not really. Why? I said, what I did is I knew I was going to be away from my son. So I came in 2 hours early and then I came home. And after the thing, I said, guys, I'm not going to spend time with dinner. I want to finish my project and make sure I get it out on time. Because getting it done for you and for our clients is absolutely my priority, just like loving your grandchild. And with that, they've opened up a whole new communication channel. And
That's
that's what I'm
awesome.
talking about. The table stakes change. That's
Yes.
the difference. And so there's a great example of how the new world is going to allow, I think, for stronger relationships. He's not going to say someday, as I've had and you've had when we've done job descriptions for people, or rather evaluations, and we submit them and go, he always delivers thing on time. It's more than that. He learns how to use his time so that he meets the needs of everybody, including himself. Very different thing. Why is that important? Because that's what you have to do for your customers. Okay. So
That's
it's a
funny.
training ground that we're going through right now in the last 5 years, and we'll go for, excuse me, probably for the next 5 years, but it's fascinating to watch it.
Absolutely, it is. It is. And just describing that scenario brings back memories of my dad when he was still here and alive. And one of the interview questions that he used to ask for a new hire was, "How do you feel about working on Saturdays?" Could you imagine if I asked that today?
Can you imagine doing that now? I agree 100%.
They
The world
look at
has
me like I
changed
had
a
seven
lot, and
heads.
unfortunately, we don't talk about it. And I think what's really important for families to do is to have that conversation with the group because it frees everyone up and it's going to unleash creativity. So the biggest thing you and I see with AI, and I'm spending a lot of time in the last month or two on this whole issue, is when you and I first met AI, in a sense, in the last year or two or three, it was this whole issue of what jobs is going to wipe out, who's going to be unemployed and things like that. What we're now learning is, A, we got it all wrong. It's not necessarily the gopher job, because that gopher job needs bodies and needs people, excuse me, to do it. What it is, it's the kind of knowledge work that a computer can just do faster and easier. So lawyers are going to be affected, doctors are going to be affected, there's some scribing, all kinds of things are going to happen. So the conversation's changing, and Microsoft just recently published a new article, which I'm now sharing through my Thrive work that I do so people get it, that the real conversation is what jobs are most susceptible to be changed and what jobs are not. And I would recommend to all of your listeners, Forbes just recently had someone write an article which listed the 40 most vulnerable, the 40 least vulnerable. There's a function of what they're doing. I'm also a big advocate. I just gave this to my sons. I have three boys, so I definitely know what a family is. And our goal eventually is to build an empire for them. And as they say, Dad, you do know when we're ready, you're the chairman of the board. I said, no, I'm going to get to make the coffee in the morning and take out the garbage. You guys can be the chair. But the bottom line is to be able to look at where we're going with this stuff and how we change it. So I showed it to one of them. And I said, there's a book out called Primal Intelligence. And what it does is it starts with the question, what jobs are least vulnerable? And the question is why? And comes up with four I things and it's a test you can take on the internet. Do you have that? And so our conversations and my family when we get together now, they've all been asked to read it. They're all reading it. They're all taking the test. What did you score and where it is? And we're all different. But the point is the difference is also important, right? So if you're strong in one thing and I'm strong in something else, you learn to leverage with me and I learn to leverage with you. Same kind of idea.
That's interesting. And we could probably spend several hours talking about AI and our positions and philosophies on AI and where it's going. But coming back to something that I'm sure you've seen a lot in your practice and your Vistage peer groups is leaders, and maybe AI is even the subject matter of this question too. You're seeing leaders wrestling with what I'll call growth limiting beliefs. They've got beliefs stuck in their head and they're it's something that's holding them back. What would you say are some of the most common growth limiting beliefs that might be holding, say, a family business leader back, and how might they move past that?
So there's two issues, and let's divide them. What are the beliefs? Where do they come from? And therefore, how do you change it? That's the three. So the first is we're also, each brain leader has built a model. We have a lot of frameworks. One of them is we live a 200-year window. And the reasoning for that is when we're first born, in those first 5 years, 10 years of our life, we form most of our attitudes toward things because we only have one group of people who are able to teach us, our parents. We spend most of our time with them. We see the world through their eyes. They didn't build the world that they live. Their world was built by their parents. So essentially, there is a roughly 75-year period before we start that's taken place of a world that set up where these beliefs came from. So when aging is obviously age brilliantly saying we can live a 100-year fulfilling life comes from the premise that when I was a kid in 3, 4, I had this great grandmother that I can barely remember. I just remember there was an old woman that was treated like she's unable to do anything and she's old. And I assumed that was the same thing until I started getting smarter and older and realizing, wait a minute, one has nothing to do with the other. It doesn't make you disabled. It's a function of what you do. And that's what age brilliantly is about, is showing people. So we are living in a world that was created before we started. And here's the second part that's important. We're going to end up in a world that's being built by people that are our grandchildren. So we live in the world that was created, and that's where the limiting beliefs come from. That world of the beginning of the 200 years, which is our grandparents' world. And we're dying in the year. So put it in a different perspective so people can see it. We grew up in our generations from our parents' world. Their world was one where if you had a store and everyone's traveling on horse and buggy, then you came to the bar or to the hotel and you tied up your horse and you had to have a trow because you didn't want that horse to die of thirst. Okay? So it's a law that you have to have a trow. Can you imagine what happened when we stopped having horses? Is how long it took to get rid of that law. But you and I are going to die in a world where we're going to have cars that don't have people running it, right? Autonomous vehicles, including the autonomous plane systems that do short distance because it's an easy way to manage it and look at it. And so, as I said to my kids, I grew up in a world where we barely had cars, and I'm going to die in a world of Ubers. And then he said, and there's no driver in there, right, Dad? I said, absolutely no driver in there. Okay. So that's part of it. We have to understand the limiting beliefs come from that world, and we're not willing to give it up. So, one more example. One of our competitors talks about middle age all the time. We never talk about things like that because we consider thinking about retirement, middle age, all of those things are limiting beliefs because they were defined at a time and a place that's not appropriate. In 1900, the average American lived to 46 and a half. That means middle age was 23. Can you imagine now going around to someone and say, oh my God, you must be old, because that's still a little bit, nobody does it. But the point is, we still think that way and believe it. So the trick is to just get rid of them and constantly ask, in the world I'm going into 5 years from now, what's the belief that's going to be most valuable? And that's how I've raised my kids to think about it. And I said, if you ever see me holding on to something that doesn't make any sense for me, tell me, and I'll see it and I'll reject it because I don't want to be that kind of person. So I think the three parts are to understand where it came from, where we're going, and how we have to go say, what got me there, meaning 5 years ago, is not where I want to go 5 years from now.
That's a great point, and I think it shows up in so many aspects of our life. I'm just thinking some interactions with doctors as a 53-year-old male. A lot of the healthcare system is rigged to, in your 50s, you prepare for retirement and death, whereas I'm in better shape in my 50s than I was in my 30s.
And God willing, you'll continue to be that way because now you're working out every day and you're learning how to do it and you'll take the supplements.
So they're not equipped for that. They're like, wait a minute, why are you doing this stuff? Because I'm healthy, I feel good. But talk for a minute. You brought it up, Jerry. Age Brilliantly. Tell us a little bit about that. Talk about Age Brilliantly and what that's all about and how that might be interesting for our listeners.
So there's two answers to that. Age Brilliantly was built around the simple idea that if we're going to, so a lot of people, let me go backwards. In this industry, when I first started it, I teach in China, and I'm in China and I'm asking myself, what do I want to do? And I said, I want to build one more company with an incredible culture like I had before at Brilliant Image. And I want to pick a project this time that I know won't become obsolete. Knowing that we were going to have computers changing meant I knew it was always going to be obsolete and I have to sell, which is what I did. But I want something that's evergreen. I don't know what that means. I'm going to look. I start reading papers in the hotel. In English, there's only one Chinese one that's English. And every other issue's got two, three articles on longevity. Because in Asia, Shanghai, in Japan, in all the countries around there, Korea, you have people living much longer than we do in America. Okay, we're not doing a great job in America. At any rate, I'm looking at that. I'm going, wow. So if we get to live longer, that's wonderful. First of all, we don't have to be sick, is what they're really telling me. We could be healthy, but no one tells us to do that. Second, we don't even think about it. And the entire industry was built around when you're ready to retire, then why don't you start taking care of yourself and thinking about what you're going to do? And I kept thinking all my life, I work with young people because I said, why would you want to wait? Why would I want to have 20 years of miserable marriage before I have my good marriage? Why not get the good marriage when I first start? Doesn't make any sense. And so that was where Age Brilliantly came in. And so instead of saying, as many people still do, instead of retiring at 65, 70, you'll live to another 25, 30 years, my answer is I'm not going to wait till 60 to talk about that. I'm going to get my kids to talk about that when they're 21, 22, and say, if you had 80 years, how would you want to use it? And then their real question is, what standards should I use? And I said, your standards are how do I, am I happy today and how I do we live fulfilling for the rest of my life. You have to do both. So it's like a pilot. He has to manage in the moment and also manage where he's going. So in many ways, we are pilots of our own life and directing our life. And so that's what Age Brilliantly is. It's a community of people who see that, and therefore they can gain the information of what to do, not from a bunch of experts who want to sell you a product or service, but from other people who are going around and doing it. And so we're looking at people now who are going to work 50, like Henry Kissinger, 50, 60 years doing all kinds of different things from the army to having a meeting with President Xi at 99 who turned Biden down. Okay, just to show you how important you can be do at any age to do what you're doing. And what we're trying to do is let people see it. And so that's the main thing. So all of your listeners should join. It's free. You can't beat the price. And you get information. More important, you may not need it today, but when you do need it, that's the beauty of being part of a community. You just get on a forum and you ask a question. I just heard this and what should I do that? I'm in a job with a really rotten boss, but I like the job. What should I do? And 40 other answers will come out of how you can solve that, et cetera.
That's
What
awesome.
we're doing at the second level, which I mentioned earlier, is Project Thrive. We're asking the same question for the leaders of businesses. If you really want to keep your workers happy and they don't want to leave at 65, why not find great roles for them at 70, 75, 80, 85, 90? McKinsey's figured that out. Procter & Gamble has figured it out. They call them alumni groups. There's all kinds of ways you could do things. You can create phased retirement. In other words, the leading biggest companies in the world are looking at new ways of staffing their people, organizing their people so that they feel empowered in their company. Therefore, they empower the company to do more profitably and successfully. The customers benefit from a dedicated, engaged workforce. Win, win, win. That's what I've always been about. And that's where Project Thrive takes the individual and makes it a corporate issue.
Nice. That's really cool. That's exciting. Getting back to some of the work, and I would say probably predominantly around Vistage, and you've probably seen this many times over, the whole transition and succession of leadership. So when it's a CEO of a family business who's starting to think about that, and it might be to a next generation, it might even be to somebody outside the company, what are some of the things that they should be thinking about and asking themselves, and when should they start that process, Jerry?
So we all go through different transitions in life, and you can tell what they are. They're health related, they're marital related, they're children related, you're empty nest. Suddenly your friends are all dying, moving. There are all kinds of triggers in our lives. So rule one is pay attention to people's lives. Don't just think of them as robots in your company, but think of them as people who have a life, get to know them, etc. You will spot these things happening. Even you won't understand them, but you spot them. Second, what you do then is you do something which, again, the old way didn't work, the new way will work. You have a conversation about it. And you have to figure out what's appropriate to do. And I say you have to have a conversation about it because in the old world that you and I grew up in corporate America, you can't talk to a person about, are you planning on retiring in the next 5 years? Because that's an ageist thing. In the current world, it says, I want to know what you want to do so I can help you build a better career to do whatever you want, including leaving. It's okay. But let's just plan. And again, so the language and the communication is so critical to be able to help people grow. And in a family, it's even more because we all have secrets and we don't want to tell everybody and everything like that. And then the third part is that you develop a pattern that makes sense given who you are. So I'll give you an example. I have a four generation member. Okay. This person is the grandson, that initial one. Kids are now all in their 20s. So they're starting. So the first thing when we had the meeting, I said, you're not big enough right now, you and your brother. Daddy left it to him and his brother. And you'll see daddy's still involved. And but it was started by his father, first grandfather. And I said, you two have to just have this conversation about what do you want to do with your kids? You got six kids. Not that's barely keeping you two going at the very level you're going. What are you gonna do with six kids? And so they came up with a structure by having that conversation. They said, kids, how about we think of this as a community? And they could have done other things, it's not the only answer. But think of it as a community. You each can go off in your own way, and part of what you earn goes to the kitty to help everybody else in the family in your generation. Okay? So I thought it was fascinating because in that light, not one wanted to go to the maid's company. Which really said something, right? So that forced one of the brothers to say, and he's the one who's the actual Vistage member. We had this conversation, and he said, what do I do? And I said, why don't we listen to what's close? Turned out somebody else wanted to get it's an apparel company. They sell to the main stores. Main stores are all suffering. We know that retail. But he's coming up with a new idea for doing it on key commerce. And how it could be done. So I said, maybe we need to introduce an e-commerce line, experiment with it, because that'll give more brothers and sisters a chance to get involved in a different way. Got it? And with that, they went through a slump because the retail business really died. But they all stuck with little of what they were doing. Then this one took off. The minute it took off, the sign was, yep, that's an answer to do it. And now all of them are thriving at different places, which is great.
That's awesome.
Second, and this is a funny story. Daddy's still in there. He's 86. And he's got his own private office next to the guy who's the CEO slash president, who's a Vistage member. And he comes in about 3 times a week. He does a lot of charity work. Again, he's that age, you can do purpose and both. Comes in 3 days a week, comes in around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. He reads his newspaper. They get him lunch. Got his the own There's one secretary that they basically use for FAM. And then he says, okay, bring me these spreadsheets so we can do the analysis of where we are in profit and sharing, sales and profits and things like that. And they give it to him and he works on it. And when he finishes, he'll leave at 2 o'clock or something. He's had lunch, he's done the numbers, he turns it back over to my member, and he leaves for the day. And then he takes it and throws it in the garbage because it's all on computers. So I said to him, why aren't you telling him we're not doing anything with what you do and we're just making you feel good? He said, well, how would you think that would make it feel? Terrible. So he feels he's having a usefulness. He once in a while will come up with something and they make a point. Wow, that was a really good find because we didn't see that. Because you're not going to see it in the same way as when you're working at the numbers looking at it. And so they say, whatever, we get something extra out of it and we make him feel important, even if he's this is what his real role is. And so what I'm saying is every family is its own unique situation, but you have to pay attention. You have to have respect. You have to have integrity and you have to have a long view. God willing, he'll live to 116. And so he's got 30 more years in front of him. Let him keep coming in. Who's it hurting? It's not hurting anybody. And if they do get a good insight, that's great. And when the two brothers have a problem, they have somebody who knows what the business is like. Not to say, I'm not involved anymore. I can't help. You'll feel that kind of heart to get involved and do what's right to help everybody.
So let me ask you this. You've probably run into this because I've seen this too. There's times when you look at a generational transition and you see the next generation coming up and they got a lot of drive. They got good ideas. They have their own vision. They know where they want to go. And that looks great, right? And that's awesome. There's also times when you come in and you say that next generation just doesn't have it. Whatever that it is, they don't have
Gee, you
it.
must be talking about Gen Z or something like that.
And there's this obligation sometimes, or an implied obligation, to say they've got to step in. There's got to be this continuity, or maybe they want it, but they just don't have the stuff. How do you deal with those situations where you got to have the hard conversation and say, "Hey, I don't think this is going to work." Is it up to you to say that, or do you come forward and say that, or how do you address that situation?
So the irony of that is, it's a great question, but the irony is, it's got nothing to do with family. You could just be a team that's working together. You could be two partners that are working together.
Yes,
What
sure.
it's really all about is it's like a relationship. It's the level of the relationship. When you have a really good relationship with someone, you talk about whatever it is and you have candor, to use Ray Dalio's word, and you're talking about a crucial and a critical conversation and you have to have it. And as long as, and this is the key answer to your question, it all starts with values. Is the value to protect somebody or is the value to help everybody grow? And you make that choice. And so what I do is I focus people on what's the value? What do you really want? Would you rather have someone who's a drug addict who's running the company and running into the ground just because you could say my son is doing it? Or would you rather have your son, when it falls apart, have a future? Because we've helped him deal with his drug problem and move on. And so it's a function of really getting them to focus on the values and building on those values and agreeing with it. And it's families in this sense is very similar. It's just harder because it is family and it's harder to break through. But it means all the more that's the value of a Vistage because what Vistage is doing is it's bringing in outsiders helping you think it through. I have one case, I'll give you an example. Father did not want to prepare an estate plan for his kids, because he felt that if they know what he really has and he gives them the money and they think, oh my God, I'm going to get that money, they're going to just piss it off, as my father would tell me the story, a neighbor of his. So I knew the people. It was the hard part. And the question becomes one, how do you deal with that? And for years, he didn't do anything until somebody had another neighbor had a problem with the kids. And I said, what are you going to do about it? And I happened to be involved. And his comment was, I'm going to have my accountant talk to him. And I said, why? Because he's the trusted advisor to this company, to this family. And the trusted advisor, why are you resisting building an estate plan that can only help people? And he goes, I'll tell you why. I have a story. And then he has a story about somebody who told this kid about how much money he's leaving. He involved him with the plan. And then what the kid did is he started getting on alcohol, started buying fancy cars, and had an accident and killed himself. And said, I don't want that to happen to you. And the accountant turned to him and said, I know, Paul. Do you really think that's what Paul would do? And he stops and he thinks and he goes, there's no way Paul would ever do that. He says, do you know why? Well, I raised him the right way. So if you raised him the right way with the right value system, why are you judging him by their value system? Why not by your own? And with that, I was told the thing got solved and he did it. So you bring in an outside trusted advisor who brings in the perspective and helps him go back to a core thing. And for that, let me give you one more thing. So one of the members, one of the presenters that it's a partner of ours at HBR, it's a company called Corenology, Corenology. They specialize in 44 values. There's a book on it called Riveted, which is incredible. I read it and then I gave it to my kids and I was shocked. They both read it in one day. That's how you tell a story, 72 stories on these values by people like Oprah Winfrey and things like that. Tony Robbins, really incredible. And if the point is, it's all about the values. It comes down to that. So I think what we do is, and this goes to something you started with, we have a limiting belief that families have problems. That's a limiting belief. That the families, like everybody else, they have some limits, but they don't have to have them. The trick is we have to help them understand the values they should have and help them focus in on them. And that's what Corenology does. It works with financial advisors. It works with this lawyers, estate planning lawyers. It's trying to help other people through other people. And I think it's a great thing that it does. And we bring them in. And I'll even tell you, November 11th, they're going to be the presenter at our Fall 25 series of, we do every Tuesday at 1 o'clock during series for these, what we call roundtables, virtual roundtables, so people can have a conversation. It's not a presentation. It's boring, just like your podcast hopefully is not boring. I heard about your speaker. He's an interesting guy. Anyhow, it's the same kind of thing. We have these conversations and people learn.
Cool. So a question that I often like to ask, because some of our listeners are on the younger end of the spectrum. They may be 20s, early 30s, and they're at something of a crossroads. Do I join the family business or not? Do I go on my own way or do I get involved in the family business? And I know that was a big decision for me when I was at that crossroads. So what would be a piece of guidance you might give them, Jerry, as a young person that's saying, I'm thinking about getting involved in families, I'm not sure. What might you tell them and help them make that decision?
So there's one approach that I've seen that I think works the most, and it's to say every child should go work somewhere else while they're growing up to experience other work, other bosses, other customers, etc., just to get a feeling for life and understand what it is before they make a decision they want to work for the family business or not. And so I think that's the first thing, and again, the one I gave you with the four generations. Each of the kids is out there doing something else before they came to work in the company. It's a really good equation. That's statement number one. Statement number two is once they think they want to come in, you can, if you do it intelligently, is create an objective system for onboarding people and seeing if they can do it or not. And you really have to do that. You can't go in and say, that's my father, that's my brother, and therefore I have to do X, Y, and Z. And you get treated that way. Okay. So I happen to have one family member right now that I work. I've been helping them groom the son to take over for the dad. And what's always been interesting, and they even brought in the mom to fill in a role during COVID. And what's been interesting in that model was when we talk about his family, mom and dad, we talk about the company, it's the name and the name. Got it? In other words, it's
Yeah.
like anybody
Okay.
else. So I think the key here is the loving attention to I'm going to treat you fairly and objectively and not through nepotism or anything like that, because that way you'll make the best decision for yourself. And then the agreement has to be you go through some period of time, test it out. You then make a decision just like anybody else would. And if I don't really think you're going to make it very well to the young person, I as the older person, I'd say, I wanted to tell you, have the ability to tell you that so that you hear it. Doesn't mean I'll be right, because guess what? The world I lived in is not the world you're going to live in. So maybe it'll work for a different reason, but I need you to hear it. And that's the final part. There's the invisible ingredient that none of us deal with. There's a guy who wrote a book many years ago in the 1990s called Selling the Invisible.
Yeah.
It's always, remember that?
Harry
Great.
Beckwith.
And when
Yeah.
I teach in China, I always go through some of the videos and the stories because they're just great. But the thing that strikes me in the family business issue, you know what the invisible is? It's wisdom. It's the experience. You talk about things you've done and you think of them as things, but it's really experience. It's understanding why it worked and why it doesn't work and being able to share it. And I think when you do that and then you have a problem, it's easy to go back to the person saying, I'm having a problem, it's not working. And you don't feel bad about it because I don't have your experience yet. What would you
Yeah.
do in this case? And I have to tell you, once I grew up with my parents, my father, everything, if I wanted to borrow the car, if I wanted to borrow $10, he treated me not like a family member, just the opposite. You know, the interest rate's 5%, so you're paying 7%. You want to pay it or not? And I go, why are you taking? Because I want you to know how tough it can be. And looking back, I hated when I went through it, but looking back, I've explained it to my kids why I didn't like it and everything. I said, I won't do that, but I will charge you the 5%. I want you to learn the same way I did. And why was that great? Because when he got older, he had no trouble turning everything over to me. And as I got older and needed to borrow money, I never had a problem with him. I had one problem with a partner at one point, and we needed to borrow money to get through a really hard time because we didn't have enough credit. We were too young. And my partner was much wealthier than I was. And so I figured he's going to get it. How am I ever going to get it from my dad? And my father says, this is the interest rate if I put it in the bank. He said, I'm going to get that. You pay me the same thing, Jerry. I'm glad to give it to you. I then said to my partner, I got the money, and his father wouldn't give it to him.
Wow.
And his father said, and I said to him when he told me, like, what am I going to do? Close company? So I said, Dad, I've never asked you to do this before. Would you talk to his father and find out why and how? And he called him. And he says, because I don't trust him. He doesn't always do what he says he's supposed to do. And I don't fully trust him. I don't think I'm going to get screwed, but that's how I'm feeling about it. And then my father did something I will never forget. He said to him, Jerry tells you it's going to get repaid. And he knows he has to pay for both of them. You can bet if the sun comes up tomorrow, you can bet that he'll keep his word for that. And that integrity that he'd seen in me all those years was what he was banking on. And with that, the guy said, okay, I'll lend it to him.
Wow.
Okay. And so that's what it's about. It's about values. It's about trust. It's about having conversations. And the value of Vistage for anybody, whether you're a family or not, is that's the kind of meetings we have. What do I do if I've got a child who's autistic? How do I handle it? I want to leave money to two kids equally, but one doesn't need it because they're a billionaire and the other one is going to be on social welfare to do illnesses. How do I handle that? And the right answer for that one, by the way, is that's not about the money. It's about the talking. If you don't talk about it, it's where the anger comes from. The rich one will say, I don't need the money, but I want the honor that you're talking to me and you're getting me involved. And every time I've studied this stuff for Age Brilliantly and for myself, it's always been that same pattern. It's just respect, honor, values. And that's why I deal with you, because you have those attributes.
Thank you. Thank you. Last question. And this has been tremendous. And clearly, Jerry, a wealth of information. If our listeners wanted to learn more about you or your work as a Vistage Chair or even one of the platforms that you're running, like Age Brilliantly or Thrive, what's the best way for them to find out more and connect?
Well, first of all, agebrilliantly.org, is it? J
Okay.
Cahn, JCAHN is my email. Feel free to write. you're interested in knowing about Vistage, it's jury.com at Vistage Chair, Chair. I know I look like a table, but I'm only a chair. And you can write to me there. I'm literally on the emails 24/7 almost. It feels like that anyhow. And I'm always glad to help people and provide recommendations. I highly recommend if you want to grow faster, talk to me about Vistage. If you want to be a person who's going to be more whole, who's going to do that with their family, change their business as a result of that to grow and thrive in the future, then talk to me and Age Brilliantly. And if you're not sure which, either one.
Good to talk to you. Awesome. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us and Growing Up B2B. Your insights on leadership, transition, and legacy are incredibly valuable, especially for family business leaders preparing for the next stage of growth, their lives, or succession. Again, we've been speaking with Jerry Kahn, Vistage Chair and Holistic Strategist, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Jerry, thank you again for being with us.
Thank you. It's great. It's great helping you. And hopefully somebody will like it.
I'm sure they will.
That's it. Anyhow,
Thank you.
anything else I can ever do for you, let me know.
Thank
I have
you.
one question. Maybe I can reciprocate.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeleaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.